I'm Harold. I'm an alcoholic.
Harold.
I too was asked to speak at this about an hour ago. I was at a barbecue pool party with some sober friends, and I get a call. What are you doing? What I just told you. I'm at a pool barbecue party with some sober people. Get down to the conference. We need you to speak. And as it was said, you know, it took me about 5 seconds to be like, God damn, all right, fine. But it's true, you know, when AA calls, I've been taught, and it's been proven time and time again in my sobriety that I just have to show up. As I was sitting here, I didn't even know what the topic was. But I can say that for the first 25 years of my life, I lived AA through the eyes of me being a child, of a teenager. I didn't pick up a drink. I took my first sip of beer when I was 16 with my best friend and my niece and her best friend and hated it. That was the only taste. I didn't taste alcohol till in my 20s. But I say that for the first 25 years, my life was full of alcoholics. My mom left my dad because he was an alcoholic. One of my brothers was an alcoholic. Aunts, uncles died of alcoholism. My sister and her husband, who raised me through my teenage years, were alcoholics and were divorced because of alcohol. So alcohol, that whole lifestyle was there, always present. The nice thing is, as I look back at it, I can look at those, how it all goes, ties me back to my own alcoholism. At 16, one of my brothers passed away, pretty tragic. That was hard, really hard for me. And that's when I was introduced to the Mormon religion. I was living in California. I was born and raised in Costa Rica until I was 10. We moved to California. And at 16, when this whole ordeal was going on with my brother that died, I had a girlfriend in high school, and her faith was the LDS religion. So they comforted me. It worked. It worked where I felt, you know, that God was watching over me and helping me through that, you know, through that trial, having my brother be taken away from me. It worked where I even went and served a mission for 2 years. And those were 2 years that were awesome in my life. And then I got back from my mission, and she waited for me. I don't know how familiar you are with the LDS religion, but we were high school sweethearts. She waited for me through my mission, and we were going to get married. So I came home in August of 1999 from my mission, and we were talking about planning a wedding, and I flipped out. Out of nowhere, I went up to her family, and I said, I'm moving to Utah. I'm going to go to BYU, and I'm not going to get married. They were pretty pissed off. So one of my ex-mission companions came up to California, helped me pack up. We drove. I went to BYU for a semester. And then in December of 1999, which I had already known this, but never really had acted on it, I decided to Google gay bars in Salt Lake City. Obviously, I'm a gay man. But that was the first time where, although I had feelings about it, I had never acted on it. You know, I loved Candace, who was my girlfriend in high school. I served a mission, and I was, you know, those 2 years, I was an excellent missionary. You know, I never did anything outside of that faith that would have required me for to be excommunicated until that December of 1999, where I Googled gay bars in Salt Lake City. I was a BYU student down in Provo. Got in my car and drove up to this place, this bar called The Trap here in Salt Lake. I had no idea what to order, except I had seen some show where you order a Jack and Coke. So I walked up to the bartender and I said, can I get a Jack and Coke? I could just see his name is Antonio. I could just see his face. What are you doing in here? He gave me a Jack and Coke. I tasted it and I hated it. I mean, as it was said, it was bitter, it was nasty, there was nothing there. That was at 21. The year later, I moved up to Salt Lake for a job. I left BYU because obviously I knew that I had some tendencies that, although I had not acted on them, they were against the LDS faith. So I moved up to Salt Lake for a job, and that's when I met my first partner. He was a drinker. He wasn't an alcoholic, as I am. But as I started learning about, you know, you go out to bars and you drink and you hang out with people and you drink and then you smoke, about the age of 22, that's when I started to drink. Socially, that's when I picked up and learned how to smoke. And it was okay. The first 4 years till about 26 was fine. I could stop when, you know, at 11 when everybody else did. I didn't have to have cocaine around to help me keep going the rest of the night because I wanted to drink some more. And there were some good times until my first partner and I broke up. And that was the realization that, oh, how do I cope? How do I deal with this? At 16, I had mentioned that the religion helped me to cope with my brother's death. At the age of 8, my mom helped me to cope with my brother molesting me. So there was always something that I looked to help me deal with things. You know, at the young age, you know, through, you know, some molestation, which I'm okay. My brother and I are, you know, we love each other today. You know, I had my mom and it took, you know, help me walk through that. At 16, I had a church help me walk through that. But at 26, I had found a new friend. It was alcohol. I didn't have mom there anymore. You know, I didn't have a church anymore. All I knew was that if I drank enough through this whole breakup, that I wouldn't have to feel. So that's when my drinking escalated. At the age of 26 was truly the moment where the breakup occurred. My drinking cost for me to lose my job after 5 years. I was pretty career driven. I stopped going to college. So it all just came down on me. And for a long time, I sat in my apartment and drank a liter of vodka a day. That's what I did. And then I found Coke. And it was just like, oh, I can do both. And I know this is AA, but it was interesting because, again, that's part of my story. And I could drink and drink and drink. And then if I needed to get up and go get some food, then, you know, you do the extracurricular drug and then you can make it to Del Taco and then get back, eat and drink some more. So that's how it was for about a year until I ran out of money. I never ended up in an institution or a jail, never got in trouble with the law, but I ran out of money. I mean, the first attempt at getting sober without the program was when I got my last check. And I told my best friend here in Utah, I said, I need to get some help, really. I was out of money. Can you drive me home to Utah? To California, where my parents live. And she's like, yeah, well, I'll drive you there. So she took care of my apartment here, you know, packed everything up. And she drove me to California with my two dogs. And that was in September of when I was 26. I stay sober for about a month and a half. And then I died. I found myself being helicoptered over to UCSF and waking up not knowing what had happened, and I had a stroke. That wasn't enough, though. So that stroke led to having major brain surgery, 59 staples in my head. Lost, you know, some body movement and some speech, and through therapy and all that stuff, it took about a year to get back to normal, if you will, as it relates to, recovering from that stroke. But that wasn't enough. I kept drinking, and it wasn't good to drink when you're on seizure medication, because I ended up back at the ER almost every month, if not every week. Then I told my mom, okay, I'm going to quit. I stopped drinking for about a month. And I said, I got to move back to Utah. I'm better. I'm fine. My life is back in Utah. So my best friend came and got me, got settled in here back into Utah. was doing good for a few months and then got back on alcohol. So until the age of 32, when I found the rooms of AA, I was that lonely alcoholic. I wasn't a bar, you know, clubbing person. I wasn't, you know, I had a lot of good friends, but because of my drinking, I had lost a lot of relationships. So I found myself in my apartment doing a lot of drinking, going to the ER a lot because, you know, my seizure medication and alcohol didn't go well together. And then on May 15th of 2011, that's when I told my best friend, something's got to change. Today I know that it was obviously my higher power doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. This time I Googled Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't Google a gay bar. I found the Alano 3 p.m. meeting. I went to it. My best friend, I didn't have a car. She picked me up. She dropped me off and went to that first meeting with me. And that's how it's been ever since. So that was May 15th, 2011 is my sobriety date. Whatever it was, which I know is what my higher power, whatever was said, I did. The two gentlemen that were instrumental that first day of my sobriety, Dustin and Aaron, are here. Aaron was chairing, and he talked about, if you're a newcomer and you need a temporary sponsor, come see me and we'll get you connected. So after that first meeting, I went up to Aaron and I said, what's this about a sponsor? And he connected me with Dustin. Dustin took me outside and said, are you done? And I said, what do you mean? Are you done drinking? And I said, yeah. He gave me a big book, gave me some readings, and you know, we started working through the steps. That's when I learned, obviously, about UC Paw and Salty Paw and, you know, Y Paw and all of this. So I started, obviously, connecting myself with young people, Alcoholics Anonymous. I started attending. I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I talked to Dustin quite frequently. And I went to these you know, young people meetings. And they loved me. You know, they said they loved you until, you know, you learn to love yourself and you learn to love others. And they did that. They really did. And that's since May 11th. There's been some hard times. I made big mistakes. I've gone through some hell. Last year, as I was picking up my 2 years in a 48 window, I had my dad, my grandma, my uncle, and my niece pass away. And guess what? I didn't have to drink over it. You know, I cried, you know. But I was there for my mom, who lost her mom and her brother. You know, I was there for my sister, who lost her daughter to cancer. And then, of course, my dad passed away. So it was just beautiful. Today, one of the things that I remember early on, today I'm not as involved, and this is where I love this just sobriety, because I didn't register for this conference. I came yesterday because one of our friends has a table for the Utah Rainbow Roundup, and so I wanted to bring him dinner last night because he's been here all day. So I brought him dinner, and he's like, well, stay for the speaker meeting. I'm like, okay. And then today I call him, do you need anything for lunch? You know, so it's just interesting how sobriety works, you know. And then I get a call, you need to speak. And I'm like, what? You know, so I'm sitting here because I let the process work. And whenever AA calls, I answer. I'm not as close to young people, Alcoholics Anonymous, as I was at the beginning today. But what I'm learning today is that it's calling me back. And I just have to take that, and I think that's awesome. It's taking me back to the beginning, because that's all where all started. So it's connecting with people, you know, from Arizona, and you know, this conference, and then just getting back into this. There's a purpose for it, and I just have to go with that. I always say that, you know, relapse is not a part of my story. You know, it is for a lot of people, and that's okay. But if you were here, or even if you weren't at the speaker meeting last night, he said, you know, he's come to the realization that and this is my realization as well, that I will die of alcoholism. It will kill me. It just won't be today. And when he shared that last night, it was just like, I mean, pretty true. You know, there's a pretty good chance that I will die because of over drinking or whatever it may be of this disease, but not today. So I'm grateful for this program. I'm grateful for the suggestions, the opportunities to be of service when called. It works. I don't overthink it. I've been walking around. Today I have a beautiful partner that's also in the program, and I have to say this out loud because it'll help me get over it. I've been walking around with the resentment towards him. And my sponsor once said, Carol, get off the cross. We need the wood. But sometimes it's kind of fun because this whole week I've been like, you know, carrying this cross and, you know, I want him to like give me attention and he hasn't been, which is pretty just like, fuck, come on. But it's just interesting that, you know, it's about progress. I by any means don't have this in any perfect form, but it is people that are through you. I mean, having this meeting with, you know, just five of us, pretty amazing. I mean, because I've... Oh, that's right. 5,000 of us. 5,000 of us. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty awesome just to know that what I've heard today, it's just elevated my, you know, my sobriety by a million. And that's what I love about this program. So with that, I'll take it to the 24th.